until 11. You're listening to Mitchell's Front Page on 94.7 The Pulse. Proudly brought to you by Cario Waste Management. Station sponsor.
That was the voice of Bob Knowles there at the end of that TAC community notice board. Of course, he appears in all those CFMEU ads now for the election. He's cashed up. With me on the line now is Carolyn Witzman, Professor Carolyn Witzman from the University of Melbourne School of Design, and wanting to talk today about the East-West Link. How are you, Carolyn?
Very well, thank you.
So the East-West Link is shaping up to be a very big election issue, I suppose. And what do you think the impacts of it are?
Well, I think that the Liberals put a lot of eggs into that basket, and it isn't necessarily delivering the chickens that they'd hoped, to mix my metaphors a little bit. There's a perfectly good reason why the Liberals favored the East-West Link. There was federal money available for the East-West Link, but not for the public transport connections that had been prioritized by independent reviewers. So the Liberals have put a lot of energy into trying to get the East-West Link going, a lot of haste, a lot of secrecy, missing cost-benefit analyses, and given that they were elected very clearly on a public transport mandate, I think a lot of the electorate has been pretty unpleased with that change of direction.
The East-West Link, I think, was in that Sir Rod Eddington report that was done into Melbourne Transport. But are you saying that it was either further down there as a priority, or that this independent study that you talk about has found a different conclusion?
Well, the Eddington report initially said, yeah, East-West Link eventually, but Metro Rail and a couple of other rail priorities delivered a more straightforward cost-benefit. Mm. So it's not just the independent study that was done by three universities, Melbourne, RMIT, and Monash, that showed that it was going to be more money than it's worth, to make a long story short. That bad news had already been delivered before the 2010 election, and both the premier of the time and Terry Mulder, the roads minister, had said that they weren't going to be making roads a priority, that they were going to be making public transport a priority. So they've sort of gone back on that.
I mean, I suppose the East-West Link brings many benefits, but as you're saying, it is very expensive. It's not a cheap project to do the tunnelling. I think it's about $17 billion, is that right?
The first stage is going to cost, at least according to independent analyses, about $18 billion, and that's not even going to benefit people in the West, going towards Geelong, but also Werribee, until the second stage of the East-West Link. So what's been costed so far is the first stage of the East-West Link, which is the central city part of it. The next stage of the East-West Link would parallel the M1, and then there's a notion eventually of another ring road. The problem is that roads are incredibly expensive, and at a certain point, road infrastructure isn't going to help with congestion. The only thing that's going to help get 5 million now, 8 million soon, Melburnians around, is going to be an efficient public transport system.
Do you know when the government says that they'll be doing that western stage of the East-West Link when they're actually elected? I guess that's from the Tullamarine Freeway out to the Western Ring Road, because that's going to be of most relevance to our Geelong listeners. Do you know when that would actually be?
Well, no, because one of the hallmarks, unfortunately, of this government has been a great deal of obscurity about actual timelines, actual costs, actual contracts, etc. It's been whatever the opposite to a transparent process could possibly be.
Opaque process.
Opaque, thank you. That's a really good word.
And you're saying that the cost-benefit analysis shows that it's better to put money into rail. And is the Metro Rail project, which I think is that tunnel from South Yarra Station through the city, it's another thing to, I guess, ease the burden on the city loop. Is that the priority in your eyes?
Yes, and that goes back to another, there was a great deal of planning that went into one configuration of inner city rail, which was supposed to sort of loosen up the congestion of trains in the central city loop. But the Liberal government has come up with another configuration that isn't terribly well costed out yet, but which includes Fisherman's Bend, which of course makes a lot of developers in Fisherman's Bend very happy, but does tend to fly in the face of millions millions of dollars of feasibility reports that preceded it. So the real challenge is finding a transport plan that will last longer than one term of government, and also one that recognizes, as unfortunately politicians only seem to do at election time, that public transport is the way to go to move the most people the most efficiently across the city.
Yeah, it's a fascinating point because I guess is the issue of congestion mostly caused by people driving around in their cars by themselves and that causes congestion, or is it to do more with the trucks?
No, you had it right the first time. Obviously, if you think of a bit of road space, it can be used far more efficiently by a bus or by a train than by a single occupancy vehicle. And even the limited success that you can achieve with carpooling doesn't replace the fact that you need a good public transport system, not only rail, but bus connecting with rail.
Yes, I guess the congestion is being caused by these single occupied vehicles driving around. And then I guess the question is, if we build these rail projects, what sort of threshold, I suppose, is required to make people switch from driving around in their cars to public transport? I guess what makes people want to make that switch?
That's a really good question. From cities that have successfully shifted people from cars onto public transport, it appears to be, you know, the cost and convenience. So if you have trains every 5 or 10 minutes, if you have buses every 10 or 15 minutes, eventually people won't feel that they have to spend 2 hours to get to work, but about the same time as it would take them to get to work. And of course, with the increasing cost of petrol, that would be another factor in the equation. Even now, it's cheaper to take public transport than it is to own and operate a car. The question is, when is it going to become more convenient in terms of time? And that's going to require good bus connections to trains and rapid trains, which is eminently feasible and would cost a great deal less than the East-West Link, even the first stage.
Yep, spot on, because owning and operating a car is a very expensive enterprise, driving around and parking and registration. So public transport's already much cheaper, but I guess the issue is having the same level of convenience. And it's a big issue here in Geelong, of course, because the bus networks are so poor that you can't get on a bus and get to a train station in a reasonable amount of time.
Geelong, as a lot of Melbourne has sort of circuitous bus routes that take their own sweet time to get wherever they're going, and really a good public transport network would get you going quickly, as opposed to very infrequent buses taking very circuitous routes.
Yeah, one of the issues that I was speaking to someone that lives in sort of the Melbourne sort of north area, that Carlton type area, and they were saying Doncaster Rail is a very big issue for them. They've obviously got that section along the Eastern Freeway, which was designated, I think, for a rail project. Are we likely to see trains going out to Doncaster soon?
It would be like the millennium coming, the second coming of Christ, because Doncaster Rail has been promised since the late 19th century, and certainly there was a rail reserve when the Eastern Freeway was built. So Doncaster Rail is an almost hilarious example, sad but hilarious, of inaction on public transport. I think you'd need to have a major parade-type celebration if Doncaster Rail ever got built.
So you think it's unlikely, because as you've said, you know, that section in the middle of the Eastern Freeway is just put aside for the train tracks there.
I wouldn't say it's unlikely. I would say that all it takes is a little bit of political will, so we'll have to see what happens at the election and after the election in terms of either Labor, Liberals, or whoever get into power following up on their promises on public transport, because you hear every election time, oh, we're going to be doing this, that, and the other thing, and then unfortunately there's very little follow-up. So, you know, beyond voting on Saturday, it's really important to keep the heat up for public transport.
Yeah, well, you raise a good point there. I mean, from your experience, how much of a vote winner is public transport?
It appears to have been the biggest single influence on the 2010 election, and it is shaping up to be one of the biggest, if not the biggest, vote influencer in the current election. Keep in mind that including Geelong, metropolitan Melbourne, and of course Geelong never wants to be considered as part of metropolitan Melbourne, but that whole urban area is well over 80% of Victoria's population, and a considerable number of them are very unhappy with public transport right now.
Was the reason for the 2010 election sort of the train reliability issues there in the Sandbelt, and that's what caused all those seats to shift? Is that what the public transport, the issue was that you're talking about?
Yes, and that's why the campaigners for public transport have been concentrating their efforts in a few key electorates.
Very interesting stuff. Well, thank you so much for joining us this morning, Carolyn. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Carolyn Whitman there, Professor Carolyn Whitman from the University of Melbourne School of Design, looking at the East-West Link and public transport.